Now on Radio 4, the Gamble Network, Julian Jenkins' investigation into online gambling. This week he travels to the Caribbean island of Curaçao to report on a story of money laundering, murder and high-level political corruption.
I was looking at an online gambling site with my 17-year-old son. He's a YouTuber, quite successful. And the site had asked him to make a video promoting their activities. Something like this.
Honestly, this website is honestly so, so cool. Like, you can win the craziest stuff in these cases.
That's not my son. It's another YouTuber who was also sponsored by the site called DrakeMal. The website let you gamble for prizes like gaming consoles and hoverboards and smartphones. My son never made a video. That was the story of last week's programme. But we became curious about who owned the site and where it was located.
On the website, it says they're based in Cyprus. But then also, if you go on to the terms and conditions, it says they're owned by some other site, which, if you Google, is based in some small island in the Caribbean, Curaçao.
It shows how little we knew about this, that we didn't know it's pronounced Curaçao. And for so many of the websites I've looked at that either targeted or turned a blind eye to underage gambling, Curaçao was the place where they chose to get a gambling licence. What was this place? I remembered a blue-orange-flavoured liqueur, but that was about it. Well, the island turned out to be about the size of the Isle of Wight, just off the coast of Venezuela, and someone who seemed to take close interest in it was a Dutch socialist MP, Ronald van Raak. Do you mind if I record this?
No, you're from the radio, so it's your work.
Yeah, it's what I do, yeah.
The reason
Curaçao, I discovered, was one of the Dutch Antilles. It was a former Dutch colony, and the Netherlands still has responsibility for its good governance, which was why a Dutch MP was interested.
These are very small islands, and they got a very strong financial system with banks and consultants or specialists from all around the world. And that made these islands very interesting for multinationals, for tax avoidance, but also for criminals, drugs criminals from Colombia or Venezuela. One of the things I'm very worried about is online gambling. In Curaçao, there are some gambling mafiosi, I call them. They are doing money laundering. It's billions.
The US State Department has named Curaçao as a major money laundering country, with online gambling as one of the methods. It says that money laundering in Curaçao is primarily related to proceeds from illegal narcotics from nearby South America. There's no evidence, and I don't believe, that the DrakeMal website or any of the others in its parent group, CoinGaming, are involved in money laundering. Is there anybody in Curaçao who is taking a close interest in this, who's investigating it?
I can bring you in contact with one who knows an awful lot about it. If you want that, I can ask this person that person can help you very much.
That person turned out to be Nadi Kram, another Dutch citizen. She's a financial investigator who runs an online newspaper. What puzzled me at that stage was that the DrakeMal website gave a Curaçao gambling license number 1668-JAZ, but then hundreds of other gambling websites had the same number.
It's basically one company, an anonymous company, that's called CyberLuck in this case, and that one holds that license. And they are selling sub-licenses to hundreds of smaller operators.
Sub-licenses. The legal basis for all this, according to Nadi, was shaky.
Sub-licenses simply do not exist according to the law.
Her argument was that the half-dozen companies that had government-issued gambling licenses had decided on their own initiative to sell sub-licenses to operations like DrakeMal, but that there was nothing in Curaçao law that said they could do that. Nadi wasn't currently in Curaçao, but in Europe. I went to visit her to see if I could get any closer to discovering who was behind DrakeMal and the other child-friendly gambling sites. She wasn't hopeful.
We like to hide things. First in a corporate structure, then another corporate structure to make it more complicated, then within the trust office, and then within an e-zone. Now, we go further.
It was getting complicated. She brought out three whiteboards.
I need another colour. I'll use this one.
So nobody knows who owns any of these gambling sites?
No. You don't know. That's the whole point of it.
Curaçao was a long way to go, but I felt I needed to travel there if I wanted to make any progress. Who should I talk to?
Mr. George Lichtveld. George will show you around.
George is a former government lawyer in his 70s. I got the impression he did what Nardi told him, which in this case was taking 2 days off work to drive me around Curaçao in his battered car with broken air conditioning.
I'm not a fan of gambling at all. I almost never gamble. But I think that the way the system is set up here in Curaçao is such a way that the government is not earning not very much money on this whole thing.
Downtown Curaçao is picturesque, with buildings painted in toy town primary colours. There's plenty of tourism, especially from the Dutch who come for the sandy beaches, and it's pricey. But Nardi had wanted us to visit the data centres which connected Curaçao to the rest of the world.
So we're standing outside a large building without any windows. It's painted blue, some of it. It looks totally anonymous. Almost anything could happen here. Yes. What do you think is happening here?
It houses the great part of the servers that are facilitating the online gambling services.
Inside, according to Nardi, were the computers of Cyberluck, which had issued the sublicense to Drakemel. But I didn't feel there was much radio mileage in photographing and staring at buildings. In any case, since I started on this story, Drakemel had moved from Cyberluck to another license holder, Gaming Services Provider. It was hard to be sure who owned Gaming Services Provider, but the public face, the directors of the management company, were all members of a family called D'Abreu de Paolo. In theory, these were the people who'd decided to give a sublicense to Drakemel, the website that had previously tried to get my underage son to promote them with lies on his YouTube channel. I paid their company a visit.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. De Paolo.
Hello,
I'm manager Jolyon Jenkins. I'm a reporter for BBC Radio.
Yes?
I wanted to talk to somebody about Gaming Services Provider, the master license holder, and who you issue sub-licenses to.
I don't think we are prepared to talk to any reporter about that.
And so I'm interested in who you issue licenses to and whether they are proper people.
No, if we are doing that, that's our business. We don't share it with anyone.
You don't share it with anyone?
No.
I phoned Nardi Kram, my original Dutch source.
So it seems to me that the purpose of this organisation is to not answer questions.
Yes, that's what the trust companies do. They always say we value the privacy of our clients. They will never tell you even who's behind it.
Weeks earlier, Nardi had told me an alarming story of her own about Curaçao, which made me wonder whether I should even be there.
I had to flee the island. There were attempts of murder. They tracked me down. So I had to flee. I had to flee to Holland. They gave me some sort of protection. So I was in a witness protection program. Eventually, I had to flee also from Holland.
Was this connected to gambling?
Yes, directly, of course.
The people she feared were not the D'Abreu de Paolos or the people they represent, but other powerful gambling interests. At first, I took her story with a pinch of salt, but I began to change my mind. In 2013, Helmin Wiels, leftist politician and anti-corruption activist, had threatened to reveal information about money laundering by gambling interests on the island. 2 days later, he was relaxing on a beach. Two men approached him and shot him. Dick Dreyer, a local TV journalist, came close to witnessing it.
I was at the end of the street in the Martin King Boulevard, and I got a call from my colleague who was just at the restaurant 20 metres away where Wills was shot. And he said, "Dick, you have to come. They shot Wills." And I didn't believe it. And I said to my wife, who was at the wheel, steering wheel, I said, "Turn around." We turned around. I arrived 5 minutes after the killing. Wills was just on his belly.
Was he dead?
He was dead. Yeah, he was dead. He was immediate. He got 9 shots. And he was dead instantly after the 9 shots then. And then, at a certain moment, more police came, and more crowded it became, and more emotional it became, because women, especially women, Wills had a lot of women supporting him. They were yelling. And, I mean, that day, Curaçao lost its innocence. You can get guilt of what you say and what you do in this island.
This is the bit of beach where it happened. It's a public beach, a bit scrappy. children playing. There's a small memorial to Wills with an empty whiskey bottle. Apparently Wills liked to drink.
Were the killers caught?
Yeah. The ones who execute the murder, they are just guys from the street.
And then there's who ordered it.
And then who ordered it.
Who were the suspects for that?
George Jamaluddin, finance minister of the MFK cabinet under Schot. The half-brother of lottery king, Robbie Dos Santos. Very well befriended with Minister of Justice by that time, Elmer Wilsu.
Too many names. But the official suspects are, number one, the former Justice Minister, who used to run a casino and went on to chair the Gaming Control Board, which regulates casinos. Then there's number two, the former Finance Minister. He fled to Venezuela and had to be extradited. Last month, he went on trial for murder. We await the verdict. Then there's number three, his half-brother, Robbie Dos Santos. Robbie Dos Santos runs a popular lottery. You see signs for Robbie's Lottery all over the island. He's already been convicted of possession of a firearm, money laundering, making false tax returns, forgery, and participation in a criminal organisation. And he's close to our first suspect, the former Justice Minister. All of them deny any involvement. But Robbie Dos Santos ties back into the gambling story in another way. You remember the question of whether it was legal for the six master license holders to issue hundreds of sub-licenses. George had a stash of internal government documents that shed some light on this, dating back to the 1990s, when the first very short law was passed permitting internet gambling. The documents came from a former colleague.
These documents are provided to us by one of the constitutional lawyers that worked for the government at that time.
So he drafted the laws?
He drafted the laws, yes.
He also had to interpret them, particularly when license holders asked for permission to issue sub-licenses, and he believed that sub-licenses were not legal.
So have we got a document where somebody asks for a sub-license?
Yes.
And our man writes back and says, no, this is not compatible with the law?
Yeah, it's in here. There's a petition for a license for offshore gaming.
So, he's saying, I understand that you've applied to be a master license holder and also to have the right to issue sub-licenses.
That is the request.
Okay.
That is the request.
The request comes from the lawyers for Robbie Dos Santos, the lottery king and money launderer. And it's the first time, so far as we can see, that anyone asked for permission to exploit their gambling license by selling sub-licenses.
And then the answer by the Minister of Justice, again, this has been drafted by the Constitutional Affairs, yes. I cannot give permission thereto. And the reason for that is that the present ordinance does not allow that to happen. Besides that, it's my opinion that such is also not desirable. By doing so, it would create difficulty when it comes to the responsibilities, yes?
What they're saying is you wouldn't be able to handle or supervise or be responsible for
all the sub-licenses. That is what the XSC is.
There are plenty more letters in the files where people ask for permission to issue sub-licenses and the government says no.
There was never a letter sent out allowing this to happen.
But they did it all the same.
They did it all the same.
And did your source, did he complain about this?
Yes, he did.
And what happened?
The control on the whole matter was neglected. It has been neglected for the next 20 years.
According to each license, if the license holder wants to start a new game, in other words, a new website, it needs permission from the Ministry of Justice. Nobody asks for permission. Instead, hundreds of new websites are started using the so-called sub-licenses. But why would you want to have a Curaçao license? Well, firstly, if your company is registered in Curaçao, you can pay minimal tax. And secondly, having a Curaçao gambling license is enough to persuade some banks to let you open an account with them. And the bank will trust that any money you deposit with them is the proceeds from your gambling operation. And then there's the light touch regulation of internet gambling, so light as to be imperceptible. One site that used a Curaçao sub-license was called Lock Poker.
I'm Brendan Doyle.
Okay, and just tell me a little bit about where do you live, what do you do?
So I live in New York City. I live in Brooklyn, New York. I work in healthcare. You know, I'm a full-time
Brendan was a keen player on the Lock Poker site.
In 2013, I deposited $400. Very small stakes to start with, And then I moved up. I started playing $25, $50. It was the first time I was making six figures playing poker. So I quit my job in January 2015. And at that point, I had one withdrawal from Lock Poker for $1,000.
How much did you have in your accounts there?
Close to $200,000. So then I set up my next withdrawal right after that for $10,000, which was the maximum you could withdraw. And that money just never came to me. And I'm panicking because I don't know how to get the money out. I'm not working. So I decided I was going to start selling the money I had on the site for maybe 10 cents, 20 cents on the dollar. But honestly, there was very few takers because most players at that point were aware that there was something wrong with the site. So I really didn't get any additional money out of the site. And it was kind of gross because at this point, they're still doing marketing and advertising, yet players can't withdraw.
Lock Poker went under. Although the site was licensed in Curaçao and had a Curaçao management company, the real owner allegedly lived in Canada and had a habit of what were called lifestyle spends. The Curaçao company went bankrupt. Curaçao attorney Arendt de Winter became the trustee in bankruptcy.
I have to go after the money on behalf of the creditors.
But there wasn't any money in the Curaçao holding company, Stacktrace. This is normal.
When I want to try and hold management liable, they hide behind the next company. You try to get them, but they're gone. And you try to get them, and they're gone. So I'm always one step behind. And it's going to be like that for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And I can litigate for 20 years, spend thousands of dollars in litigation.
Wherever any Lock Poker stroke stack trace money is, it's certainly not in Curaçao. The only people who have money there is the company that granted the sublicense. It's Cyberluck, the company that originally issued a sublicense to Drake Mel.
Cyberluck has a license from the government of Curaçao to operate online casinos. Stacktrace was operating the casino under Cyberluck's license. From what I have seen in this particular case, the license holder has certain obligations that they do not check anything. It's just collecting the money and that's it. They have no idea what's going on in these casinos, in these operating companies. They have no idea what's going on there.
And no interest?
No. It would only be a lot of work, I guess.
Arendt de Winter decided to sue Cyberluck, which had issued the sublicense, and he was successful. The court held that the license holder was just as liable for the debts as the company it had purportedly sublicensed. The case is currently under appeal. The court didn't rule on whether sublicenses are actually legal, but making the license holder jointly liable is a big step forward, since there's practically no other way of holding online gambling operations to account.
But there's no oversight. I haven't seen any proof of oversight. Nothing.
So if you lose money on an online gambling site registered in Curaçao, and you go to the government of Curaçao, or the public prosecutor, what will happen?
Nothing. I don't even think you'll find an open door.
For decades, the Curaçao government has said it was going to start a system of oversight. It's long had a gaming control board, but that's only controlled bricks and mortar casinos. At the end of last year, it said the gaming control board would be taking over supervision of online casinos too. Its head is Mr. Gino Campbell.
Thank you for calling Gaming Control Board.
Is it possible to talk to Mr. Gino Campbell?
Hello, could I talk to Mr. Campbell, please?
There is no one available to take your call at the moment.
Is it possible to speak to Mr. Campbell?
Hello, I'm trying to get hold of Mr. Campbell.
Hello, could I speak to Mr. Campbell, please?
Yes, sir, just a moment.
I never managed to talk to Mr. Campbell, and neither did he reply to email. I don't think any other journalist has interviewed him either. Gino Campbell used to work for one of the top Curaçao casino bosses. It's a small world. But you'd hope that someone starts to regulate Curaçao online gambling, because it certainly needs it. Ari Weissman is a compulsive gambler living in London who keeps being drawn back to the Curaçao sites.
There was like one day when I lost £2,000-£3,000. So I said, enough is enough. Like, I don't want to keep on losing more and more and more. So I wanted to stop. basically I wanted to stop gambling. So when I contacted the site asking for self-exclusion, like meaning with the full terms, like don't let me come back, I won't be allowed to open my account again, they sent me official email that my account is permanently self-excluded. And then, like, a few days later, like, I'm not talking about a week or month later, just a few days later when I was asking about my account status, they told me you can reopen it if you want, despite the fact that it was permanently self-excluded. So reopened the account, and I had a few more losses over there. Like, eventually, like, losses around, you know, $7,000-$8,000, say £5,000-£6,000. So they kept on giving me bonuses all the times because they probably like it that I lost so much money. So they pushed me bonuses to my account.
And Curaçao is leading the way with gambling in cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, which make it even harder for problem gamblers to quit.
With the invention of Bitcoin, when so many websites just allow you to deposit and withdraw anonymously, completely anonymously, the only thing you send is Bitcoin deposit. At most, you provide email and a password, but email is not enough for you to self-exclude yourself.
Anyone can buy Bitcoins, even kids.
Like, even if you're 12 years old, nobody's going to stop me. Nobody's going to tell me anything. Nobody's going to regulate me. Nobody's going to ask me for my date of birth.
How would a child buy Bitcoin?
Some websites allow you to buy Bitcoins with cards. There's some websites that allow you to exchange your gift cards to Bitcoin.
So you give your nephew a gift card for their birthday, and the next thing, it's they've lost it all in Curaçao.
Yes.
I checked this for myself. The first Bitcoin casino in Curaçao was called Bit Casino, set up by the Australian Tim Heath, who we heard from in the last programme. It doesn't have a UK licence, but I used a VPN to set up an account from the Netherlands, where the site doesn't have a licence either, making it illegal. I bought Bitcoins with an Amazon gift card and deposited them on Bit Casino. I was never asked to prove my age or my identity. Maybe if I'd tried to withdraw my winnings, I'd have had to do it. According to lawyer Roloff Bykirk, this is where some casinos make trouble.
I have about 50 clients who are entitled to money from playing and who don't get paid out.
Are these winnings they can't collect or what?
Yeah, winnings or just deposits they made, and then they ask for a payout, and then they get either just blocked without any reasons giving for not paying out, or they give some reason which is not valid. There's some players from, for instance, Denmark, who have an IP address in Denmark, who pay deposit with Danish krones, and then they want to collect their balance, and then the casino says, well, you're not allowed to play from Denmark, and then they come up with a paper which states excludes Denmark, but then I've got the proof that the exclusion from Denmark has been in effect after they ask for their winning. So it's...
So they don't mind taking money from Danish people, they just don't like paying out.
Correct.
But more than that, the whole system seems to be designed to make a few people very rich.
I don't see how the population of Curaçao benefits from this system in which the government only gets a little money from the master license holder, and they make a lot of money which is not going into the pockets of the Curaçao government or people. Let's assume that the license fee is $3,000 a month, which I think is a fair assumption. If you have over 400 sub-licenses, which I've been told some of those license holders do have, and you collect from everyone $3,000 a month, you can make over $10 million a year just in licensing fee, and that's all based on this one signature from the government you need to receive every 5 years, which gives you the renewal of the license. So this is, in my opinion, a strong incentive for corruption, because you have such an interest in obtaining the license, you have this incentive to support the political parties, to pay bribes. I don't say it happens, but it's an incentive.
There's very strong evidence that there is a link between gambling and political corruption in Curaçao.
The first Prime Minister of the island after it became autonomous in 2010 was Gerrit Schotter. He teamed up with a man called Francesco Corallo, who had huge gambling interests and who, according to the Italian police, is a mafia boss, although Corallo denies it and he's never been convicted. I went over the story with Curaçao journalist Dick Dreyer.
Gerrit Schotter sought opportunities to get into politics with a substantial amount of funds he needed.
He needed money and Corallo had it.
And Corallo had it. And Corallo
saw an opportunity to get into politics.
And to make sure that his casino licenses and his gambling business could survive after 2010. And Corallo was even trying to make sure that he was able, he was the one who appointed ministers in his cabinet. There are documents on that.
So hang on, so we've got somebody who the Italians say is a mafia boss, who is entering an agreement with the Prime Minister of this newly autonomous country to appoint the ministers.
And, most importantly, Corallo wanted to have a guy in the central bank.
Schotter tried to appoint Corallo's man, but the scheme came unstuck.
There was public pressure to investigate what's going on. What leaked to the streets was so overwhelming that they had to do something. On the computers of Gerrit Schotter, the evidence was found. Yes. Money laundering. Corallo decided to bring in money based on invoices of services that had not been delivered. We talk about two invoices, at least, which has been taken out of the computer of Gerrit Schotter later on during the investigation. And then the money traveled via Switzerland and via Miami, and in a way to whitewash it.
So the Prime Minister was actually laundering money himself.
Yeah.
It's as if the very foundation of this country was corrupted from the start by gambling money.
Yes. Yeah.
Or to put it another way, someone accused by the Italians of being the mob essentially tried to buy a country. In 2016, Schotter was jailed for 3 years. Curaçao is a long way away, but there are children and other vulnerable people in this country who are gambling on sites that are registered there. And site owners are, between them, funneling large sums of money into a secretive network of gambling interests. And gambling interests on Curaçao are provably linked to corruption and money laundering. The Dutch government, which has overall responsibility for Curaçao's good governance, and indeed all European governments which have inconsistent and often unenforced laws about internet gambling, really need to get a grip.
The Gamble Network was presented and produced in Bristol by Jolyon Jenkins.